Test 1, 2, 3.
We'll call a meeting in order. We have a quorum on the resource committee. And our first bill will be HCR 9. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Julius J. Breck, and I'm Director of the Division of Banking and Securities within the Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
Yeah, you may continue on and call somebody to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd first like to thank the committee for the opportunity to come before it to offer comment on this concurrent resolution. Unfortunately, I find myself having to differ with the provisions of the concurrent resolution. There are basically two provisions. First one alleges that the department and the division has not enforced the provisions of AS 10.05.702 uniformly, and I don't believe that's correct. And secondly, the resolution alleges that the division has not adopted a definition of affiliate different from, the division has adopted a definition of affiliate different from that provided in AS 10.05.825 for N18.
Well, what we wanted, it's in your Department of Commerce and Economic Development. And it's been in there for about 5 years that we would get a report on what Warren and Westmond is in fisheries. And we haven't got the report. That's the reason we believe that everything is set up, but it's not being done.
A specific report on fisheries was requested?
On how much corn and Westmont is in the fisheries in the state.
The present law reads that any foreign involvement, basically, in a corporation that's doing business in the state, whether it be a domestic corporation or actually a foreign corporation, that is one that is incorporated in another state or outside of the state of Alaska. And so therefore the information we get in is on all corporations, not just corporations involved with the fisheries industry in the state. And the division does require that information be filed with the annual report as is required by Section 702. If an annual report is submitted to the division and does not contain some information in that particular blank, that is either that the blank that there is no foreign affiliate or actually listing names and addresses as provided by the statute, then if that information is not provided, then the annual report is rejected. And that's basically all that the law provides that the department can do. It's a passive operation. We can, if some information is provided, we have no means really of checking the accuracy of the information, and the only thing we can do is if there's no information provided, we can reject the application. And we do have procedures, the annual report, and we do have procedures for following through on that. On the initial incorporation of a domestic, we also require that they submit information on foreign affiliates. And also for the registration of a foreign corporation, we request that they provide that information. If it's not provided, they are not incorporated or are not registered respectively.
Is there any questions from the committee? Representative Miles?
Mr. Jack, just run through me again. What definition do you use for affiliate?
We use the definition that is provided in the statute at AS 10.05 point, I think it's 825 paren 18. It's a definition that is based on a definition used in the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission Act.
Where did the language on line 19 and 20 of the bill come from then?
All right. As I mentioned, we send out an annual report to each domestic and foreign corporation. The annual report has one of the requirements. I'll read what the report actually states. Attach as Exhibit A the name and address of each non-resident alien affiliate. If you have none, indicate in the space provided. And there's a space. And in paren C, reverse for explanation. The reverse side of the form states as follows. AS 10.05.702 requires that the name and address of each affiliate, which is a non-resident alien or a corporation whose place of incorporation is outside the United States, and the percentage of outstanding shares controlled by each affiliate be listed in the annual report. Now, there's been apparently some confusion over that statement. It's been represented that that constitutes a definition. I don't believe that it is. It starts off by saying that Section 702 requires, and then it just paraphrases what the statute says.
Can I just take a look at that?
Certainly.
Do you have copies for this thing?
Unfortunately, I have just one copy, but you're free to use, look at this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Breck, have you ever requested funding or have you been appropriated funding to establish a cadre of auditors to audit these reports which you're getting a copy in to make sure that the people have not been lying when they filled them out or have filled them out completely, I guess would be a more appropriate way.
You mean specifically for the foreign affiliates requirement?
Well,
in addition
that,
to other,
that is only one part of it.
That's correct.
Yeah. My question is, have you ever asked for funding for a cadre of people, or has money ever been appropriated to furnish you with a cadre of people to audit these returns, these annual reports that come to you, to make sure that they are truthful?
Not beyond what we can verify from information in our office. I mean, for example, if...
Doesn't exactly answer my question.
I think the answer you're looking for is yes or no. I would say no with one qualification. We do have people that process these annual reports, and they have been with the division even prior to this particular enactment. Part of their responsibilities are to review the annual reports when they come in for completeness. In some, if you look to the form, there are several other things that are required. Certain of those things can be verified by information that's in the file, and we could question that. But as to whether we've added personnel to specifically investigate this particular issue, or perhaps the other issue of whether or not the corporations are complying with the AS 10.05.702, I believe it's paren 9, dealing with the 5% shareholders. We have not requested, we have not received such money.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, continue. In other words, you do not have a cadre of auditors that go to the various corporate headquarters and investigate their books to make sure that what they have reported on these forms is indeed factual. In fact, you haven't even had a cadre of people to even spot check any of them. Is that correct?
That's correct. We do not have such the cabinet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weiser?
Mr. Chairman, Julius, do you have the capabilities to pull this information out of your files? How much foreign investment we have in Alaskan fisheries or corporations at the present time, and how accurate would it be if you did pull it out?
Well, again, we're just relying on the corporations to supply us with at least some information. That is, either that the information that the request is non-applicable to that corporation, or at least one name. We have the capability of producing a list of all corporations that have so reported to us. Since the present corporations law does not require that a corporation specify the type of business, the specific type of business that they engage in, we cannot sort out fishing versus timber versus mining and so on. But we could give you a full list of all corporations that have so filed, and that would be out of a total filing of approximately 11,000 corporations, foreign and domestic in the state.
In other words, you're saying you can't break this down to designate what companies have foreign investments in the domestic fish companies in Alaska?
That's correct.
What, Mr. Chairman, of what value is this information, then, if you can't break it out?
Well, the statute requires not that it just be for fishing. It says it's for all corporations. It's a requirement on all corporations. The provisions of AS 10.05.702 apply to all domestic and foreign corporations doing business in the state.
Which, Mr. Chairman, if I may, which really, we could probably get that from the Division of Business Licenses, couldn't we?
I'm not that familiar with the way they, they're...
If they're doing business...
Distinguish between domestic and foreign corporations.
But I mean, we don't really, it's just a report that really doesn't tell us a great deal. So what is, but what value is the report then if it doesn't really indicate in detail what type of holdings they have in the state?
Well, for the purposes that you're suggesting, it has minimal use other than the fact that you've at least sorted out the foreigns from the domestic corporations. But even there, it wouldn't help you. That's correct. It wouldn't help you.
Thank you.
Representative Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was about to ask a question along those lines. When any corporation comes into a state to do business, there is some type of permit or registration or something.
That's correct.
Okay. And we already have laws on the books that they will report their affiliation with a foreign corporation.
That's correct.
Okay. Why is it so difficult not to be able to put your finger on every corporation is doing business with a foreign affiliate?
We can do that, but we can't sort it on any finer scale. We can't give you...
That's as far as we can go.
Right. Because the law does not require the corporation to specify... Let me put it this way. The law requires that the corporation specify the type of business it is in which it's engaged, but it also allows it to engage in any lawful business. It can have that as the category that it specifies when it either registers as a incorporates as a domestic corporation or registers as a foreign corporation. So we could give you a listing but it would not necessarily be complete on fisheries if the corporation had happened to indicate that it was in the fisheries business.
And we have no way of really having a tight control of knowing that the law is being upheld. Is that true?
I believe that's basically correct.
Yeah, thank you, Representative. Mr. Fuller, you mentioned. Yes, Julius,
Let me backtrack here just a little bit. I'm just getting a little bit confused or falling behind. Is it your department there that's been charged with this responsibility to find out what the foreign involvement has been within the industries in the state? Is that right?
Well, we have been so charged through the requirement that such information be reported in the annual report of domestic and foreign corporations.
But the funding is not available, at least to the level for you to pursue this in a great detail. Is that right?
Yeah, we certainly don't have funding to verify information that's received.
Is it within your powers, Mr. Chairman? Is it within your powers then to request additional funding to make a more complete and thorough report?
We could certainly request it, but I'm not sure what the total number is, but let's say that there are 100 or maybe even as much as 1,000, that's 10% of all corporations filed, that have reported that they have some foreign affiliate. I would venture to guess that it would take a considerable amount of effort to verify even those corporations, let alone the other 9,000 that had not reported. If you're looking for reliable information, I think you'd have to almost look at every corporation that was filed and doing business in the state to make sure that they would have reported correctly.
What I'm leading up to, Julius, seems to me that the Advocate came out with a news release there back in December, I think the week of the 12th through the 17th, in which they listed a good deal of the fisheries and the foreign involvement within those fisheries. Was there any follow-up on the behalf of your department to pursue or to research any of that information that was brought forth by that particular newspaper?
Well, the reporter that wrote that story did work with the division for some period of time in collecting information, and we did supply him with a list of corporations that had reported foreign affiliates.
Were some of those figures, at least to me, they were quite shocking to see how much foreign affiliation was actually involved in the fisheries. Wouldn't this have stimulated you to go on to pursue other areas other than fisheries to find out exactly how much foreign involvement was involved?
Well, Mr. Doherty was the reporter on that story, and I don't know if he's here or not, but I would differ with several of the statements that were made in that report. It's my understanding that the information that the division had as to the reporting of foreign affiliates was accurate. That is, he didn't find any corporations that had not filed with the division that they had foreign affiliates. Let me also follow up on that. I did, of course, see that same article, and Mr. Terry Gardner had expressed an interest in this earlier, going back a year or so, and I knew that he might be interested in that particular article, so I sent him a letter setting out what I felt the division was doing to enforce this particular portion of the Alaska Business Corporation Act, and I have a copy of that letter for the record if the committee wishes it.
I'll defer it, Chair.
That's okay. I just got one quick question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Julius, is there anything in statute that prevents a foreign corporation or a foreign interest being affiliated with a corporation or a company doing business in Alaska, either by owning stock or anything else?
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cotton.
Yeah, apparently there's been a request by at least some people for some pretty specific information as to how much of, or how great a percentage of a certain industries is owned by a foreign interest, right? And what you're telling us is from the information you now gather that you can't really give as specific an answer as what some people would like?
We can provide them what information we have in the file, but we cannot verify the information. If a given filer was untruthful in that filing, in this regard, there we simply do not have the resources, the manpower or the money to verify that information. And even if we did, it would be a considerable task, I venture to say, to verify that type of information, because you're really talking about the full set of all corporations doing business in the state.
Well, okay. So there isn't a deficiency in the law that now exists on the books or anything. It's just a matter of your lack of manpower to really dig in and verify that. Is that really the point here?
Well, that's true. The definition of affiliate is certainly far-reaching. It says direct or indirect control. And it puts no lower limit on that control. I mentioned earlier that it was based on the SEC definition of affiliate. However, it departs from that definition in one major respect, in that the SEC definition puts a lower limit to 5% ownership or control. Here you're asking for total ownership or control. And for instance, if there was one individual that had one share of stock, regardless of if it came from Canada, Japan, or some other country outside of the United States, they would have to file, that corporation would have to file that information in their annual report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Julius, how many corporations are filed in the last week? Approximately.
There are approximately 11 to 12,000 filed, including nonprofits.
Okay. Of those, how many would you say would have, from your records, in your files, would have foreign affiliation?
I don't have that count.
Ballpark.
I would hate to venture to guess, but we did make a check of that some months ago, and I could provide that information to the committee, at least based on that computer run.
50% maybe?
I just really couldn't guess.
Thank you.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Julius, here I'm looking at Title 10, Chapter 5, 702, paren 9. And it uses name and address of person owning at least 5% of the shares. When the word person is used there, is that meant to be an individual, or is it a corporation, or what?
It's interpreted to mean person in the legal sense. That is, it could include a corporation, a partnership, any entity, including an individual. Might also point out that, well, on that particular definition, it says a person. That has raised some concern, at least in the case of one filer. They refused, or they alleged that they satisfied their duty under that portion of 702 by filing just one name. And I maintain that was not correct, and we got an attorney general's opinion to back that up. And so we have made efforts to enforce the act as I see, to the extent that we have the ability to enforce it. And that really basically means that we can reject a filing. We reject an annual report, or we reject a request for registration of a foreign corporation, or reject a request to incorporate in the state. But beyond that, we really have not too much control. I would say again that the definition of affiliate is pretty far-reaching, and it's based on an SEC definition that is very good in the context of a new stock offering. However, in the context that we have here, I would suggest that some limitation may be appropriate. And I do have some other definitions that I could suggest to the committee if they were so inclined.
Representative Eisen.
Mr. Chairman, of course, there has been great deal of interest in the amount of foreign participation in the fisheries. Matter of fact, there's been quite a, it's alarming at times, like Representative Starr mentioned a moment ago. Is there some way, seeing you have 11 or 12,000 corporations in Alaska, and we know that there can't be many, much more than maybe 200 in the fish processing or purchasing business in Alaska. Could we somehow or other work into that and examine that those particular people who are involved in fishing and go back and find out what their foreign involvement is instead of going from 12,000 corporations trying to get down to the 200? What vehicle do we have to do that with?
Well, one way would be to require the corporations seeking incorporation, as persons seeking incorporation or registration as foreign corporations, to indicate that if they are involved in some manner in the fishing industry, I'm not sure just what the words are, we have to think about that, but if you require that they supply that information when they incorporate or register, or and also require that they supply that sort of information on their annual reports, then you'd have a much better idea as to just what that group of corporations is in the state that engages in the fishing business. And to some extent, you can tell by the name that whether or not they're involved in the fishing business. It might, I mean, a name might be Johnson's Fish Company or some such name as that. Obviously, they are in some way involved in fishing. Might be in fish processing, not actually catching a fish, but that might be one way to solve your specific question about or concern about the involvement of foreign interest in the fishing industry in this state.
Mr. Chairman, but that again involves going through these 11 or 12,000 reports to pull this information out. Is that correct?
That's correct. However, we do have a computer system that has just been devised and debugged, be the technical term, within the past several months. And it would be possible to have a flag, another technical term, but a means of tagging those corporations that do engage in the fishing industry so that the computer can extract that information in a report very quickly.
But of course, that information has to be fed into the computer before it can be extracted. So
that's
the information
true.
We have now would not work. We'd have to have different types of recording in order to do that.
You would have to have an additional requirement imposed on corporations doing business in the state to indicate whether or not they were involved in some manner in the fishing industry.
Thank you.
Representative Chatterton.
Yeah, thank you. I have two unrelated questions, but I'll try and get them all off at the same time. One is Julius, I know it's another department, but I presume that when companies file their fish tax return, why they identify themselves.
Yeah, I believe so.
That would be one way you could find out about it.
And we have, in fact, done that in the case of one request.
All right, good. The other question I have for you is very simply this is, in a publicly owned company, what can the management of that company conceivably possibly do to prevent foreign interests from a foreign interest from buying 5% or more of its stock?
It'd be very difficult, I think. Because
difficult or impossible?
Next to impossible.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more questions, sir? Hearing none, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, one other thing. He had some recommendations on how we could do this, some proposed changes, if in fact this is the information you're trying to seek. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I'm
shortly.
If your intent is to get as complete a picture as you can of the foreign involvement in the fisheries industry in this state, then my suggestion perhaps would not help you in that respect. What I suggested was that perhaps some lower limit on the reporting requirement should be imposed, 5% ownership in a corporation, for instance. There is another definition that I've come across that pertains to definition of affiliate, that pertains to condominium laws. And it sets out in much more detail just what an affiliate is. There's been some amount of uncertainty expressed by corporations that are trying to comply with the statute. We get telephone calls or written responses from requests from time to time as to just what is meant by affiliate. And of course, we have not adopted any regulations under the Corporations Act, and so we really have not much that we can do other than just to refer them to the actual statement of the statute.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions from the committee? Julia? Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. John Williams? Mm-hmm. Would you identify yourself quickly, please?
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Williams. I'm a policy analyst with the Legislative Affairs Agency. I'm appearing today at your request. If I could, I'd like to sort of go back and start over again from when Julius first sat down and look to the resolution and the definition of affiliate. The definition provided for in statute is a definition that, if not identical, is very similar to the securities and exchange definition of affiliate as a person that directly or indirectly through one or more intermediaries controls or is controlled by or is under common control with a corporation subject to this chapter. Although Mr. Breck claims that it's not a definition, their annual report form on the back indicates that an affiliate is a non-resident alien or a corporation whose place of incorporation is outside the United States. Well, it's very common, just as a business practice, not for the purpose of evading disclosure or anything, but for, let's say, for purposes of example, a Japanese corporation to set up an American corporation in Seattle. So it's, for example, it could be Mitsubishi America, Inc. It could be wholly owned by Japanese interests, but it's an American corporation. Mitsubishi America, Inc. then owns a corporation in Alaska that does fish processing up here. Their name may be Alaska Fishing, Inc. Well, when Alaska Fishing, Inc. fills out their annual report form, and they pick it up and they see that an affiliate is a place of incorporation outside the United States, they say, my parent company is incorporated in Seattle, therefore I have no foreign affiliates. This definition that they're using on their annual report form is significantly different from the definition provided for in statute. When those provisions were added to Title 10 in 1975, and that definition was entered, there was also an intent statement that said that it is the intent of this chapter that the definition used in these chapters shall be the same as the definition used by the Securities and Exchange Commission. And if Mr. Breck is worried about ownership of less than 5%, that intent, I would think, would give him the power to put a 5% floor on that and then use this definition as provided for in the statute. With regard to the derogation of responsibilities section of the resolution, I went through all the corporate files in 1977, and it wasn't very hard to pick out the fishing interests. I went to the Department of Fish and Game, and I got their intent to operate list and also their annual report form list. On that, there were some non-corporations, which were easy to separate out. Then it was a matter of about 2 man-days to go to the Division of Corporations and pull those files and look at the report forms. And I can tell you that at least in 1977, there was not an enforcement of the provisions of the disclosure of foreign affiliation. There were a number of cases where that was not responded to, or it was responded to in such a vague term that you could not figure out what was going on. In fact, there were corporations buying fish that year that the Division of Corporations had no record of. Their files, at least in 1977, were not very complete.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Cotton?
What are your recommendations, John? This resolution, I suppose, were you consulted at all with on this?
Yes, I drafted it.
Well, do you think that there's, I mean, this really doesn't do much. We're just telling them to do something that they claim they're really not able to do, or they don't feel like they're able to do it very well anyway, under the present circumstances, so.
Mr. Chairman, in 1977, I asked why the definitions were different on the annual report form from the statute, and at that time I was told that the reason was is that they had 2-year supply of annual report forms, and that as soon as they printed some more, they'd replace them. Well, when Mr. Doherty did the article for the Advocate, he also asked them why they hadn't changed it, and they said, well, we just ran a new batch this last month, and you know, we've got enough for 2 years now. My suggestion is if Mr. Breck has trouble with this definition, perhaps he should tell the committee what that trouble is and maybe work with you on getting a definition he can't live with.
Mr. Mayor, questions?
Yeah.
Representative.
Yeah, thank you. Sir, I don't know. Is this definition of affiliate on this thing that was handed out?
Yes, sir. I think it's item number 10. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any other questions? Apparently not. Mr. Williams, do you think this would do what we're trying to find out, this resolution?
I think if the people that filled out the annual report form saw a definition of affiliate that was very similar to the definition in the statutes, that you would get a lot of information on foreign holdings or foreign investments in the Alaska seafood industry.
Representative Elias.
Mr. Chairman, evidently, John, you've had quite a bit to do with drafting this resolution. On line 15, which refers to the non-uniformity, what do you mean by that?
Well, the most obvious non-uniformity are those companies that are held by an American corporation, but that American corporation is wholly owned by a foreign interest. We missed that altogether with this definition. There were instances where it's known within the industry that a particular company was, the majority was owned by foreign interests. But the report, in response to this query on annual report form, may be answered by saying, this corporation is owned more than 35% by in somebody's name as if they're a resident of the United States. And that would be the only response. And to my knowledge, there was no effort to clarify those types of answers.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none. Thank you, John. I'll ask for a motion from that, so I make a motion. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so we're done. Okay, our next one is House Bill 327. Have you John Messenger? Identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Messenger with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, last time we met on this bill, House Bill number 227, basically I testified as to the revenue effect of that bill of reducing the floating cold storage and freezer ships from 4% to 1%, and testified in opposition to the bill and showed the revenue effect of approximately $1 million a year. At that time, I mentioned to the committee that we were introducing a fish tax bill which would standardize the tax rate at 4%, and that bill has subsequently been introduced in the House and is before this, has been assigned to this committee. Mr. Chairman, I did not catch your opening statement. Did you want me to testify on 306 or limit my testimony to 227?
The two of them goes together. I guess we were holding 306 until we got to our...
I don't have any additional comments on House Bill number 27. Other than my earlier comments that I would oppose reducing the tax rate for freezer ships from 4% to 1%, that was because of the revenue loss to the state from that action.
That was how much?
Approximately $1 million.
A year?
Yes.
How does that $50,000 go back to the onshore-based people? Is that going revenue sharing or something?
Yes. We figure that there would be a reduction in of about $50,000 in revenue sharing to municipalities.
Thank you.
This isn't a 4% tax on the floaters. It's only if they move within a period of 12 months. They pay the same revenue. And the reason I had this bill drafted up was like the small boats I told you about, Sample and King Cove, you know, the 50 footers and smaller. They can't get another processor in to process crab because if they move from Dutch Harbor down there for a short period of time, go back to Dutch Harbor where they're going to process all the crab, then they have to pay 4%. So it's putting a hardship on the little boats. On the big boats, it'll make a difference. They'll run from the Bering Sea down to Kodiak or Seward or Homer or wherever they can sell them. And if they pack 500,000 pounds on the big boats, the little boats will pack anywhere 10, 12, 15 thousand, they can't run to another processing plant. And this bill wasn't, what to say is to collect taxes for state revenue. If they wanted to collect taxes, they would have put a 4% on 12 months of the year, not just for the time they move. This is what I'm talking about. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any idea what percentage of this $1 million revenue that we get comes from the small boat? How much of it comes from the big processing catcher processors, and how much of it comes from the small boat people that you're trying to help? Do you have any idea?
No, we try to get a study out on that on taxation. I think I'm not sure if they're working on it now. Maybe somebody here can answer. The only way you can get that information is through what is it, budget and audit and revenue. Is that right? Commissioner.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the
are you working on that trying to find out what revenue comes from out of the fishery in the state of Alaska? We made a request last year. Somebody told me they were working on that.
There was, Mr. Chairman, there was a bill before the legislature which would have funded a study, but I believe it did not pass the legislature last year. If you had a question as to how much tax was paid by a company of a certain size, we could go through the tax returns to determine that amount. But we'd have to know exact, you know, what size company and boat you were talking about to extract that information.
I think to answer your question, Mr. Torres, is nobody can get that information from Internal Revenue. The only thing you could do is get an audit on it and find out what taxes is coming out of the process of fishermen, cannery workers, and that's what I asked for last year, but I guess it wasn't
fund it, so
we don't have the information.
Maybe I could ask the question another way, Mr. Chairman. Do you have any idea how many smaller boats that you are trying to protect here with this bill that are involved?
Oh, probably, I don't know if you have a problem including Sandflex, probably 25, about 25 of that are mechanical, small boats, depending on the other.
I really can't give you a specific clarification, but around 500 or some odd boats.
You're talking about small boats, Jim?
How about these bigger crosses? Move up and down all around. That's what I was trying to get.
From them though.
You know, I'm talking that actually they pass the law.
I think we only got.
I think you need to do.
We only have about five what would move around. The other floaters they call floating processors, they're moored with about 6-8 anchors. They got the propellers taken off and they're tied to the beach. I imagine you got some of them in Kodiak, Duck Harbor. I guess they're classified as floaters, but they'll never move out of there. Jim?
I think we have some numbers on the number of vessels.
Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, the memo to Mr. Stevenson from Mary Jenkins confirms, and she said about the $1 million revenue loss to the state, so 50,000 of which is shared back to communities in which the processing is done. Is that each community gets roughly 50 grand, or it's a total of 50 grand going back to the community?
It's in this case, it would be the total the total that would be shared to municipalities.
Okay, that's
for that, based on that reduction in the freezer ships.
How many communities share the 50?
I don't have that particular figure with me.
Is it 3 or 33? I'm just trying to get an idea. If it's 50 villages, $50,000 shortfall divided by 50 villages is only.
I would say it's probably divided among several communities.
It would be Unalaska, King Cove. It's only to the first class cities or a borough.
First class cities or a borough.
Second class city don't put the amount of revenue. Standpoint went first class, and I'll be so there's three of them. And I shouldn't say Kodiak, and what else is down. But I don't think that that many boats that's moving around, I don't believe the revenue department is collecting any of that 4% because they won't move for the fact that the committee did. Because the minute they move and go back to your home base, then you have to pay 4%. You know, you would run down and process a few crabs and help out some local guy and pay 1% off your tax and then move up and do your main processing and pay 4%. It doesn't make good sense. A couple of them did do it. I think Agatam came down and bought salmon. I don't know if that is included. If it's just on crab.
Mr. Chairman, we have collected from freezer ships during FY78 approximately $1,300,000 in that category of freezer ships and floating cold storages that move. And that's the total that we have collected from that category of
okay.
Processor.
That will take in the catcher processors.
Pardon me?
That'll take in the catcher processors. What's fishing and processing the crab
It would be the processing ships. It would be those ships in which there is some sort of processing done on board, in which they are not permanently attached to the land and moved from one place to another. It's not the catcher boats themselves, it's the processing ships that move, that makes that raises the tax.
No, I asked about some of the boats go out and fish and process. They would be included in that.
Right, if they do processing on board, right, they would be included.
Yeah, I think we have two of them. Do you have some information?
Mr. Chairman, there are 14,034 vessels currently licensed to fish in Alaska waters. More than 95% of the licensed vessels are considered too small, under 50 feet, to be effectively bound. So, your question was, how many vessels, large vessels, are there? There are approximately 646 vessels over 50 feet. Are roughly 5% of the total.
Mr. Chairman, I kind of find it really difficult in the position that I'm in. I've had some of my constituents call and talk to me about this particular bill, and I can see where this situation is going to be an advantage in the area that you are in, around Sandpoint and Acadet. But the thing that I fear the most would be the floaters that would be around the Kodiak area and the Prince William Sound area and on the southeastern that would have the mobility to move about where the onshore processors wouldn't. And I don't know what this would do economically to the onshore processors, but it's my understanding and from observation, much of the mobile processors really don't employ the local people. And this is really a concern. I imagine this is not the case for your role. And this is why I kind of find myself in a difficult position. And what I'm afraid of is that for you to alleviate the problem in your area, if that in effect is not going to affect the rest of the state.
Oh, I'll answer that if I can. The next bill we got here is 306. And what your governor is trying to put on that bill is 6%. And you multiply that by 4, that's 24% raw fish tax. So what I'm trying to say, it'll kill the bottom fish in the state of Alaska, and it'll be put back into the hands of the Russian, Japanese, and Korean. And if you're going to go in around Kodiak, Pollock and Hake and out in the Gulf of Alaska, you're going to have boats out of Kodiak with the catcher processors. And this regulation, if we have on the books right now, to raise the raw fish tax, is going to kill your processors and fishing in the Gulf. You'll be able to fish around the island of Kodiak, but they said 250 miles on that convention in Seattle. You can hold Pollock and Hake, and after you go beyond that, you have a second class fish, what's only good enough for dog and cat food. Because the flesh turns to dog and cat food. So many hours. So we're looking at two bills here. If they're going to raise the tags, they have to do away with this regulation because it will stop all operations in the Bering Sea up in your district. If you ever look and get into herring, any other place, you'll pay 24%, and that'll break you before you even get started. Points that I'm trying to bring to the committee. If the taxes are closed, you will never be able to get in the fishery up there with a floater, and you don't have water where you can go in unless you go ashore and put a shore pipe. But if you move around, you will be out of the fishery business. And that happened to a lot of other people.
Mr. Chairman, I might just clarify one point. The House Bill 306 that you're talking about would not impose a 24% tax rate for floaters. This bill repeals all the current tax rates in the statute and sets a standard 6% for all processing for all fish. So it would be straight 6% for everything. It wouldn't be 4 times 6%. It would only be 6%, whether you're floating or cove-based, shore-based, whether you're talking about a cannery, a cold storage, a freezer ship. They would all pay the same rate under House Bill 306. There's no multiplier effect since the old tax rates are repealed in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm going to ask one of our standard bimbo questions about getting back to the basic. Commissioner, what's the difference between a raw fish tax and this House Bill 306? It says a tax on the value of the fishery resource. Can you just give me a real quick education on the difference in those two?
It's the same thing. It's what we're talking about is the price that is paid to the fisherman by the processor. The value or the price paid for that fishery resource to the processor. I mean, from the processor to the fisherman.
But it's all the same thing. It's raw fish. This is a raw fish tax.
That is correct.
It's one of the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry to take up.
Mr. Chairman, are we talking about both bills, or can we?
If I may.
Otherwise,
if I may, Messenger, then you would be in favor, just so we're sure that this regulation is wiped off the book. That's all I had this bill in the book. You say the other bill will automatically do it, but I put this bill up just to take it off the book so somebody don't get stuck with the 24% tax or the 6% approved. Mr. Messenger said this bill would automatically do that. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, House Bill number 227 reduces the tax rate on freezer ships from 4% to 1%. The other bill, 306, eliminates all the various tax rates, whether they be 1%, 4%, 3%, wipes them all away, repeals them, and in its place substitutes a 6% tax in place of all the other tax rates. So again, there is nothing in the statute that says that freezer ships pay 4 times what, the statute does not read 4 times another tax rate. All it says is 4%. So if you eliminate 4% and substitute another tax rate, that is the tax rate that's going to apply. So again, I cannot support reducing the tax rate. Our bill would set a standard 6% rate for all processors.
Mr. Chairman, I guess to strip away all this double talk, what he's doing with this bill is increasing the freezer ships 50% on taxes. Is that correct?
Not 50%. It raises 50% from 4 to 6%.
Okay, that's the bottom line. You're getting a 50% increase on the freezer ships under this original bill, under the governor's bill.
600%.
So it is considerably different than what you're suggesting. 6 times as much as you're suggesting.
What did the freezer ships pay? We have a different figure on that. It's 2% right now.
Freezer ships and floating coal storage just pay 4% of the raw value.
That's if they move.
That's correct.
Within a year. But what do they pay when they stay in a place for 12 months?
If they're shore-based coal storages, they pay 1%.
Okay. if your cruiser ships played tied up to the dock or on anchor in a bay for 5 months, then what did they pay?
They paid 1%.
Well, that's the one that I'm talking about. Maybe we didn't get the resolution back. Trying to get a way to guys understand me, committee. The minute the guy moved, well, let's put it this way, you paid 1% on a cruiser ship, but the minute you moved 1 mile or 10 miles, then you paid 4%. And that's the bill I was trying to appeal with in our statute.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know, maybe I'm confused a little further, but my understanding is that by adopting this bill that John here proposes, what we're really doing, where at the present time we have a difference between our home-based cold storages and ones that come in the freezer capacity. Like Representative from Kodiak mentioned a while ago, that those who are home-based tend to hire, you know, local people. They pay local taxes. The freezers don't. They can move around. So because they don't pay local taxes or employ local people, they pay four times as much. So what this bill proposes to do is going to make them equal to the shore base. In other words, where the difference we have now is going to be wiped out. They're saying that those that are home base, those that employ local people, are going to pay the same taxes as those who come into state a few months a year and go back out with the fish. In other words, equalizing the tax base, which I think, you know, is not equal. What they're doing, we're inviting processors to come into state to process and leave, and you know, the poor guy has an investment on the shore in the cold storages, is stuck with not only that tax, but, you know, the regular tax that all of us pay in the communities like Kodiak or Sandpoint or Sitka or wherever it might be. That's the big difference, is between, they're wiping out that differential between those that come in and leave versus those that stay here the year round.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to try and oversimplify this so we can get on about our business. Very simply, Mr. Chairman, as I analyze this, why House Bill 227 says that raw fish tax is going to be 1%, regardless of where in the hell it's processed, while House Bill 306 says it's going to be 6%. Now, if you had your choice between the two bills, which one do you want?
Not quite that simple, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
we don't take either one, and we're paying 1 and 4 already. So.
Oh yeah, we'll stay where you are. Okay.
Right. You know. There's three choices, in other words.
I'd like to ask Mr. Lyson, you said that the shore-based canneries employ local people. Is that true?
In most cases, it is true. I think if they have the labor market available.
I don't know. I had just.
But I can guarantee you, shore-based tax canneries within organized boroughs pay a property tax, like you and I do.
Is there any other questions on Mr. Messenger on the two?
Six and ten.
Go 6 and 10. 27.
Yeah.
Between 6.
Commissioner, I didn't really agree on fisheries matters. The essential goal of 306 is to set an overall fishery resource, establish an overall fishery resource tax system. Is that?
That's correct, to standardize the tax rate so everybody pays at the same rate, no matter
everybody
what.
Everybody pays at the same rate. One of the principal reasons we're doing it now is because the expected boom in the bottom fish industry, so that the industry knows what it's going to have to pay. Is that a fair statement? I don't mean to be putting words in your mouth, I'm trying to understand.
Well, I mean, two things. One is, We want to take the present inequity out of the tax statute, which has all these various different tax rates, and apply one, a standard tax rate. The second thing is, we're raising the tax rate to a level which will provide additional funding for municipalities and the state to fund additional fishery enhancement programs. And that's the two purposes. One is to standardize the rate, and secondly, to raise additional money so we will have funds, additional funds for municipalities and the state for fishery enhancement capital projects, and for additional money to be loaned from the Commercial Fishing and Agricultural Bank for fishermen loans and for processors loans.
What happened to, you obviously put an extensive amount of work before the bill was introduced. What's been the response?